Thank you, Joins. That's great. So welcome everybody to another episode. I am back, hopefully for good, from my COVID spell, which COVID is still a real thing. Last time Sarah took the reins, which was an awesome episode. And today we have Erica on. I don't know, Erica, if you want to introduce yourself, or Sarah as well. And let's get this thing.
Yes, please introduce yourself, because I was just asking where you live, everything about you. Yeah. I know I invited you on as a guest, but I don't actually know about your personal life, just your business. So tell us about yourself. Well, my personal life, I live in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And I hear that Kevin is a fellow Canadian from Vancouver.
I am.
West Coast, East Coast.
Nice.
I have a few jobs, but in a nutshell, I help, you know, busy women, busy humans prioritize their self-care so that really they can live their days with less stress, more calm, greater joy. I help you, you know, rewire your mindset, get back your time, energy, well-being. I help you with habit hacking. And I do all of this stuff. I'm a certified life coach and career coach, yoga and meditation teacher. I work on Global News here in Canada. I'm a speaker, author, entrepreneur, teacher of a robust program for working women called Busy to Bliss. So it's really my mission to help people avoid burnout and kind of wake up excited about their lives and not feeling like SH blank blank every day.
Well, that is a big reason we were super excited to have you on the Second Time Founders podcast, because I feel like, you know, besides working mothers, the other class of humans that burn out a lot are founders, and especially founders that have been at it for a really long time. So I'm just really excited to talk about, you know, how we avoid burnout or reduce burnout. And, you know, I fall into both buckets, being a founder and a working mother. So I'm like double burnout. So I am just selfishly really excited to get your take on all of this.
I'm curious, Erica. So what exactly, you said a lot of stuff there. What exactly do you have, like an actual company that people come and pay you for? It sounds like you'll have a lot of side gigs. Is it a large organization? Is it a startup? Like what is it?
No. I've been doing this for a long time. My startup are my essential oils. So in COVID, of course, I teach self-care and all the platforms on TV, corporately, in my book, on my website. But my startup are my Bliss essential oils. And those are therapeutic grade essential oils to help people with stress. So we have four blends, and those are for stress, sleep, energy, and immunity. So that's my startup. I have been a career coach and speaker for almost 15 years. And so I have a team. I just have a team to help me with different things. So I have, you know, assistants to help me with, you know, the back end of the things that I do. I have a speaking agent to, you know, book me a speaking gig. So I have like different people I work with and all the different things that I do. Of course, I work with the TV team when I'm at Global.
Yeah.
One-on-one with my coaching clients, and as a program, Busy to Bliss is a program where I coach many women at one time. Yeah, who enroll in the program.
That sounds like a lot.
it's a lot, but it sounds like a lot, and I guess it is a lot. But I guess my main thing really is the coaching. The coaching is my main thing.
Got it.
I threw the book, and here's my book, which you guys can see. So this was the book that was number four and bestseller in self-help on Amazon. It's called List Your Goals Journal, your list to inspire and motivate your growth. And this is how to manifest, you know, your personal, professional, health, relationship goals in the next year. So it's but it's all doing the same thing, just no matter wherever I am, if I'm here talking to you or at my desk coaching or company speaking or on TV. It's kind of all the same thing.
So what are, like, if you had to pick one or two kind of tips, especially for founders, like people running businesses, to, you know, take care of themselves and avoid burnout? Like, what are some things they should keep in mind that might not be obvious?
This is like a really big conversation piece. And I'd love to say two things. One, of course, is boundaries is a massive thing. So as founders, especially to our, you know, both our team members, if we're not a solopreneur, We just want to make everyone happy. We don't want to say no to the orders. We just want to be everywhere. It's who we are. Like, we decided, we opted out of the 9-to-5. So we are in this. So we go home with this. We wake up with this. It's all encompassing. So boundaries are really important. And I say, like, are you at your human pretzel threshold? Like, are you there yet? Have you twisted and turned yourself into this kind of fucking mess, right?
Yes, I have.
But I have a whole formula to walk you out of it. But like, boundaries are a really big thing, non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. What are the things you won't negotiate on? So like, for me, I won't negotiate on missing the big things for my kids. To me, they're my priorities. So that means I'm going to be missing speaking gigs or saying no to clients because I won't miss the French play. There are certain things. My non-negotiables are getting outside for 30 minutes every day to move my body and walk, meditating before bed every single night. That helps me with stress and sleep. These are my non-negotiables. I protect them as if I would a meeting. My morning routine is my sacred thing. It's how I start the day feeling grounded and not opening up my phone and checking social media and scrolling aimlessly. Like, I have my routine. And our routines become rituals, become habits.
Right.
Become like true rituals to us over time. So I would say that boundaries and non-negotiables are really big. And if you're listening or watching this right now, I always say I can tell how someone or a founder is doing if I ask you how you play in the five pillars of self-care and well-being. And that is what you eat, how you sleep, how you move your body, how you manage stress, and how you connect socially. So I invite you to kind of think of your life as this sort of pizza pie with eat, sleep, move, stress, connection.
What's the most important one?
It's not what's the most important one. The question is, where are you struggling the most? Are you eating like shit? Are you not sleeping? Do you have no stress management toolbox? Meaning when you're feeling really overwhelmed, what do? Do you do a Dr. Andrew Weil 4-7-8 breath? Do you go into a quiet place and meditate? Do you just keep working? Do you take breaks when you're working? Do you know that, you know, the brain likes to work in 52 minutes and then get 15 minutes of rest? So where are you struggling the most? And I say, write one action item for each thing. So let's say you're eating like crap or you're not sleeping well. So let's say you're eating like crap. What would be one tip? Well, this Sunday, you can head to an open air market. You could purchase some fresh fruits and vegetables, some good, healthy, lean proteins. You could do a little meal prep on Sunday so that, you know, during the week, instead of being inclined to pick up McDonald's on the way home, you can, you know, take out that meat sauce that you made or those chicken breasts that you marinated. Or if you're, you know, you want to reach for something junky, you can reach out for the veggies that you cut up on Sunday. So what is one action item in the area you're struggling with the most? And founder's burnout for me, and I know for me, a lot of it is that social connection piece. And we know the studies on loneliness and isolation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times we're just in our own heads as founders. We're obsessed with it. And so we isolate a lot, and that's really not good for our health. So a lot of founders is like that whole social connection piece. And you don't realize the importance of getting out of your desk, going for lunch with a friend, breaking up the workday, getting out, removing yourself from kind of that all-encompassing situation. So those five pillars of of self-care and well-being are really important. Make a list, one action item for each piece of the pie. Wherever you are struggling, rate yourself where you're struggling the most. That's your first area to walk towards. And it's these small movements, of course, that create massive change over time. It's about the habits. It's about the rituals that become sacred to us. And then as we start to feel better, they become our non-negotiables.
I'm curious there's obviously a lot of and I think with the world of TikTok and YouTube, and I think mostly TikTok actually, there's a lot of self-help people out there. I'm kind of curious, and a lot of it is trying to sell their own whatever it is. But I find that a lot of those people, I can't think of somebody off the top of my head that's really big, but a lot of them actually they haven't been in the actual thick of it at all, right? And they're giving advice to give advice. So you've obviously been through this. Walk us through your experience prior to this. How did you build this framework? I'm hoping the answer is that you actually did experience these things, obviously, throughout your career. but also maybe talk a little bit about like the kind of craziness of like the self-help guru millionaires. I'm going to make you a millionaire overnight and all this stuff, which just like drives me insane.
So agreed. So I think most of the experts out there, like a lot of them are really full of crap. And yes. So I think you've got to be really weary with who you listen to and take advice from. From my story, I started out at 24 years old. I started my first company that was later acquired 7 years later by Canada's largest retail chain of banks at the time. And what happened to me is about 2 years into my business, I started to feel quite strange. And my mom is a therapist and she looked at me and she said, Erica, something's up, sweetheart. I think, right. You know, you may need to speak to someone. And I was kind of encroaching that burnout, wasn't sleeping, very agitated, very restless, all consumed with my company. And 2 years into my business, we were a profit 50 company, one of Canada's 50 emerging growth companies. I was the only female CEO on the list. I was a top 30 under 30 entrepreneur, 40 under 40, and who's winning all these awards, but quietly in not a good place.
Yeah.
And so I went to the gym and I met Sandra, and Sandra was a therapist. And I said, Sandra, would you see me? And she said, you know, of course. And so it was Sandra who made me come to this kind of aha epiphany moment, which was, Erica, no one's making you stop doing what you do well. You're a great entrepreneur. You're really passionate. So instead of throwing, you know, water on your flame, instead, compliment it with a calming and balanced lifestyle. And she suggested that I try yoga and meditation. And so I'm 48 years old and I was 26 years old when I really took it seriously to step on a yoga mat. And Steve became my non-negotiable to me as an entrepreneur. And Steve came to my house twice a week. And he showed me what the power was when I step on a yoga mat and how I can bring my body to a state of calm.
Yeah.
Breathing and breath work and yoga. And so that became kind of the beginning, and through therapy, my journey of balancing who I am, which is I am this really passionate, very hardworking. Like I feel that I really am those both. People are like, who are you? We see you as so energetic, but yet we see you also as really calming, stabilizing. I'm really both, because I think my natural inclination is to be worried, anxious, stressed. That's who I am.
Yeah.
But I'm able to get myself into that good place every day with great habits. And so that's kind of, and then through that, then I had always, you know, mentored women in business and then started loving doing that. So got certified to coach women, sold my company, stayed home for 3 years, started a blog for women, that evolved. And I was hired to work, like it was kind of this evolution, and just loved and obsessed with helping women. So creating these great habits for themselves, the woman I usually work with is a professional woman who's killing it at work, and she's quietly just unhappy. She has bad habits and she's not taking care of herself.
Sarah, question for you is that, what do you do actually, Sarah?
sorry, I'm sorry, guys. I was going through the five pillars and I was like, didn't sleep last night, ate like shit, made myself mac and cheese for dinner. I think I agree though. Like, so I'm, you know, I need a lot of work in this department. But I also have found that, you know, when I can regularly exercise, like my exercise is running, right. And like I need to do that. And if I'm not doing it and getting out there, like I start to feel it. I get like short with my kids and my team, and right. I'm just like not right. the person I want to be. So I am really like training myself that I need to go for a run. And if I'm starting to get upset or agitated about something, like go run. And remote work has helped a lot with that. And I think also, you know, my kids are a nice forcing function. I wouldn't say that's self-care, but they're a nice forcing function to take a break from work. Like I literally, you know, people were asking me, you know, how do you switch between work and home when you're a remote worker? Like, how do you make that division? I'm like, it's really easy. My kids are home. That's the division. Right. You're not there. You don't realize it's not easy. It's hard to switch to do that switch. So,
right.
It's like a lot of tabs open at once.
Right. But it's like, I have to shut off from work. I can't be working 24/7 because I have them to force me to not work. I, you know, they'll go kill themselves accidentally if I'm not paying attention. So, you know, I think that's a nice part about like being a parent. It is obviously a lot to balance, but it's also really nice as a founder to have something else to kind of take me out of the stress of work all the time and, you know, get me on the soccer field and outside and, you know, get me doing things that are more social because I have to be for my kid. I feel like there's kind of the nice built-in balance of being a parent that is, you know, people always...
You think that there's a balance? But I feel like, so I also have two kids and I don't know if there's a balance. I find that it's actually even more chaotic, right?
Because... It is. Yeah, it is. But it's, you know, I felt really overwhelmed and kind of in the weeds. And now I'm starting to feel like my kids are a little older and they're actually like
okay,
enjoyable to be around. I mean, my little guy is still tough, but
how old are you, Sarah? How old?
I have a 3.5-year-old, a 5-year-old, and an 8-year-old. But I will say, like, my 3.5-year-old is quite mature for 3.5 because he has two older sisters. He just doesn't, you know, people will describe their 3-year-old like terrors and mine's like great, which I'm allowed to brag about because I've been through the ringer with having three kids. So I'm allowed to have like one nice break. But it's nice now, like we can go out as a family. We went to an outing the other night and it was with adults and kids. And I actually enjoyed myself. Like I didn't feel like it was all work. And of course, I had my husband there, too, to kind of switch off with. But I feel like I'm starting to see the sweet spot of like children actually being enjoyable to be around and not just all encompassing. And, you know, now my kids can be home and I can just take a minute for myself. Without them, you know, screaming within seconds. So, you know, from where I was, it's gotten a lot better.
That's great.
I'm sure it gets even better, as Erica can tell us.
Yeah.
It does. My, like, I miss that age. My kids are almost 17 and 20.
Wow.
And so I've got those boundaries, right? They understand, or even, you know, even a few years ago, they understood that, you know, let's say mom is working now and in an hour, I'm going to shut this off. And that's where I said where it's important to keep the boundaries clear between, I think, our kids, because it's hard for us. So I'll be like, you know, if you want to watch a show for half an hour, mommy's going to come play with you. We'll go outside in half an hour. But for the next 30 minutes, mommy's going to be in her office. And of course, I'm here if there's an emergency, but like if you want to play or play blocks or read or whatever, and then in 30 minutes, we're going to go outside. And so I always like to give them that sort of warning. So it kind of left me, you know, undisturbed. And then, you know, and then it lets them know that we're going to have time to play. So it makes the transition a little bit.
Kevin, how old are your kids?
So I have my oldest just turned 6 today, actually, his birthday. And And then my youngest is 1.5. So I'm still in the dark
I mean, they say zone, like when I guess. Youngest is like 4 is when it really like opens up your world. And I think I'm like starting to have that just because my little guy is so mature that I'm like starting to see it now. And I'm like, this is great. Like, it's just not all bad when I'm with my kids. It's actually a source of rejuvenation for me some of the time, not all of the time. I'm also like a short order cook and I, you know, have to do all that stuff, but I can actually sometimes relax when I'm with them, or it kind of gets me out of my element because I'm, you know, on the soccer sidelines talking to other families and getting, you know, some social interaction.
It's important that that social connectivity piece is so important to our well-being. It really is.
And also very hard to create when you start having kids. It's like you have to create a whole new group of friends that also your kids like and all of this. This is what we're going through right now as my oldest is in kindergarten, which is tough. Erica, I'm really curious on your view starting multiple companies, and also being in Canada. And because I moved from Canada to come down to the Bay Area to start a venture-backed business, because mostly it was because this is where all the money is, and this is why I want to build something really large. So I'm curious on, for everybody else also listening, like, do you think it's harder in Canada to do things? Do you any thoughts on that at all?
I can only speak to working and living and eat, sleeping, breathing in Canada.
Yeah.
But in what sense? Like, is it harder to get something off the ground here in Canada than
yeah,
in the US?
Anything. Yeah, any anecdotes.
Like the funding landscape, like, have you raised outside funding?
There's grants, there's funding, there's all sorts of things available. Like, I think it's called CanadaStartup.org. I mean, there's all different funding options available. There's still VCs, there's still banks. We still have everything here in Canada.
You have money in Canada?
Yeah,
cool. An interesting fact, actually, I still believe it's true that the top four of the top five companies as far as market cap are all banks in Canada. I've always found that so interesting. And I think Shopify obviously is in there as well. And it's just kind of crazy to me. It actually doesn't make any sense in my mind.
The banks, you know, they have a lot of power. They have a lot of money. And a big presence here. Yeah.
I mean, one of the things, like, just to connect the last third, one of the reasons I love the Bay Area so much, and I know there's, like, you know, all this controversy, is San Francisco back? Is it not back? Is it
it's back?
Is, like, you know, when I'm doing this kind of social stuff with my kids, a lot of times their parents are actually all the same people I would want to network with anyway for my job. And so it is
nice
that I can kind of have some of that overlap. And you know, I was talking about this event I went to. It was actually a networking event for me, but then there were kids there that my kids were, you know, able to play with. And I think you might not find that in other places, especially so tech heavy, a community where, you know, a lot of the families are actually really interesting people that you would want to get to know kind of on a social level anyway. So I really appreciate that about, like, the Bay Area and what it attracts in terms of this, like, melting pot of people that are just really motivated and successful and awesome. I haven't lived my adult life in other places, so I can't say that I wouldn't find that, you know, in Philadelphia, go Birds, but I don't know that it would be the same.
I think also that that's kind of on your radar. So for me as well, like, I think the beauty of having kids and meeting, you know, I have friends by choice now. So through my kids, I've met amazing professional working moms who are, like, I love them. They're my friends. We connect. We relate. We have similar struggles. And I think, I mean, that's a great way to meet, you know, meet new people, make new friends. I mean, as well, in Montreal too.
No matter where I go,
of course I meet people who are potential clients, people to collaborate with. I mean, we're a vibrant, alive city here. And we have some issues, we have some language issues and laws, and there's always been a history of the French, you know, Francophone, Anglophone fighting, who's right, what's the language here? But no, and I fully agree with you, Sarah. Like, there are times where I show up at a football game or whatever, and I need help with something, and I'm sitting next to a dad who is a lawyer or who can answer that question. I mean, that's the beauty of, I think, just also being an open-minded, curious human being. Like, I'm like that. So I strike up a conversation with everyone. And then that's just the law of attraction. I think when you're open-hearted, open-minded, your chakras are open to receive all the gifts that are being put in front of you when you're ready to
receive. I love that.
So
I love that.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. What do you, Erica, with your experience and obviously going through everything that you went through as an entrepreneur and now as a life coach and all of that, like, do you think that there are, like, different stages in, like, distinct stages in any person's, like, life? Like, is there ever a time, like, I'll even speak for myself. I find myself, like, obviously I have, like, younger kids and, like, running a venture-backed startup, and things are on fire all the time. I don't think that I'm burned out right now, but I definitely have been in the last, like, 24 months. Is there certain, like, phases that people go through that you can, like, identify or, and maybe even kind of talk about?
To answer your question, so, and this is, like, what I teach as well. So the four stages, I don't know if this will answer your question. You'll tell me if it does. It's kind of like the four stages that someone goes through. So I always talk about the first stage of this evolution is mindset, right? So a lot of us are walking around with a scarcity mindset. And the goal, of course, is to move from a scarcity to an abundance mindset. So as we are working on ourselves in the early stages of something, we generally are in this scarcity mindset. I'll never be good enough. I'll never be as good as them. They have this great business. What was me? You know, and right. So we're operating from that, you know, fear-based scarcity mindset. The idea is to move towards an abundance mindset, which is the world is open for me. If I'm able to, you know, do the things that I have to do, the opportunities will present themselves. So gratitude is a big scientific piece on that. I'm always looking, especially, I mean, social media is so dangerous. Always.
It is.
So easy to feel less than, right? That right. Everyone's got it better than us. So it's a lot about, so we can't begin to change or evolve our lives. That's why my first step is mindset. Before you even begin to do anything, mindset's first. Next is, the next stage is energy and well-being. So as we start to grow and evolve, first we get the mind, then we get the body. And that was those five pillars of well-being. That's having that whole self-care, health, and wellness routine. Because you can't be a great entrepreneur, you can't be a great parent if you're not sleeping, if you're exhausted, if you wake up with no energy, if you're miserable. Like, we're not operating in our zone of genius if we don't take care of our health and well-being. So first it's mindset, then body, then time. Once you're getting all of that, once that's dialed in, we can start to, you know, own our days, time manage our days like a boss. We can start to really trim the fat, organize our calendars so we're breathing more, so we're not so stressed and going from thing to thing. So we create white space in the day. So that's when things start to open up. So it's mind, mindset, energy and well-being, time management, and then transformation is the fourth step, which is once we've got these things moving, how do we keep it on autopilot? How do you keep moving through it, Kevin, and not fall back into habits? Or how do you go from being scared, unevolved, a rookie, all the way up to this kind of like expert operating in a zone of genius, waking up, feeling abundant, feeling creative, feeling energetic, you know, as opposed. So those are kind of, I don't know if that answers your question, but those are kind of the four steps of evolving from really a standpoint of anyone, not just an entrepreneur.
Do you think so? Like, definitely our audience is like, I think like venture backed founders. When you talk about that fourth step, do you think that it actually, like, with all the stresses that we have, we're trying to create something from nothing, we're trying to scale a team from 10 people to 1,000 people, we're trying to do all these like insane things. Do you think that it is actually possible to stay in that fourth step continuously?
So it absolutely is. We are all a work in progress. So if someone's watching this, how long does it take to change our life? So just some numbers to keep in mind is it takes about 21 days to form a new habit, 66 days up to 6 months for it to start to become more automatic. So if you're putting in the work, if you're laying your workout clothes every, you know, at night before bed by your bedside, you're rolling out your yoga mat, your exercise mat, so that it's staring at you in the morning. So you're getting up. If you're programming yourself to go to bed 20 minutes earlier at night, so you can wake up 20 minutes earlier in the morning, so you can get on and move your body right. In 20 minutes. It's all this. So it's the more, it's kind of like cognitive behavior therapy. So the way we get better, we change by doing. And sometimes it's like the cheesy quote, you do it scared, you do it when you don't want to do it. But what matters is the doing, and we grow in the doing and we change in the doing. And not every week will be perfect. For myself, I had a really busy week last week and I didn't exercise as much as I wanted to. I was like, oh, I'm just going to go right to my computer. I'm going to skip it. And that's when I need it the most. When we're most stressed, that's when we need self-care the most. And I was eating like crap because of it. And you get on this kind of bad spiral quickly, right? Like we all know when we put work first. I speak a lot to my clients about like the scales of the sweet spot. And when work is really busy, so I'm showing like when work is up here, generally us, our self-care, personally, we start to fall down here. And same thing, when work is quiet, we generally have more time to go to yoga class, to go out for lunch with a friend, right? So the goal is, how do we live in the sweet spot and keep, you know, work and our personal well-being balanced? It's not perfect. It's about practicing grace and compassion for yourself when you fall off that wellness wagon. It's about saying if it was a shitty day, it's not going to be a shitty weekend or a shitty week or a shitty month. It's a bad day or it's just a bad week. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to go back to the drawing board. I'm going to pull back those good habits, reintroduce those good habits so I can start feeling more energized in my day, more positive. Yeah.
I wonder also, you know, I've definitely felt this over the, you know, nearly 8 years of being a founder, and Kevin probably even more so as a second time founder. Like I'm not as shaken by some of those stressful moments anymore. Like it used to be the case if I had something on my calendar that I knew would be a tense meeting or a hard thing I had to do, that would consume my whole day and I couldn't focus, and it would drive me to eat like crap. And
it was a cortisol.
Like, yeah. And now it's like, I actually, you know, have one of those meetings coming up that I know is going to be a challenging conversation. And I'm like, I've time boxed it. Like, I'm going to worry about that 30 minutes before the meeting starts. And like, it's just not going to consume everything I'm doing. And I have other stuff I need to focus on today. And I do feel like it's become more of a habit to just not get as stressed or as wrapped up in the bad, that I am able to kind of compartmentalize it a bit more than I was in the beginning when it was just so, everything was so catastrophic and stressful. I'm wondering if that's, you know, Kevin, do you feel that at all, that, you know, you're able to manage it better?
I think I definitely go through periods that, like Erica was saying, that you kind of go through like the spiral I don't know, moments or points in time that like every single meeting is just like, I'm like, this is just like insurmountable. Like I just like, I can't do this. I'm probably not eating right. I'm probably not sleeping well. I'm probably not doing all these different things. And then everything is like an uphill battle. But I don't necessarily, when I'm in the kind of the good zone, I feel that, even the really stressful meetings, well, now thinking about it, they definitely still are stressful. Up until that. But if I'm not in the zone, like to Erica's point, like if I know for me, same thing when you mentioned, Sarah, like if I don't exercise, like that is like such a really big tell on like my whole like mental health well-being. And I know that then leads to me eating better, and like it's just I also am a convert as far as meditating, and like if I'm not exercising, I'm probably not doing a lot of those different things. So I definitely go through like periods of that I just like everything just seems like you're pushing like a rock up a hill, and like even those like that one calendar invite that is so small and it's just like, doesn't matter, but it's just like, it feels just like, so like crazy. I think it's more for me. It's like the moments in time or whatever, those few weeks or whatever, that I'm just like in a really bad place, and it's hard to, for me, get out of it. And I know the, like, it's like put one foot in front of the other is like kind of one of the phrases that I hear a lot about, which is totally true. I definitely get in those just like in my own head, and I just can't like even do the simplest things. But for the majority of time, and it's also kind of like interesting, like I find myself like when times are really tough at like my company, I actually like I'm able to not be in that like negative zone, and I'm able to like be more resilient. And then like when times are actually like, oh, like we just raised this round, or we just landed this big customer, we just did close this thing or whatever, I find that's actually when I typically like negatively spiral. I don't know why that is. It's extremely frustrating because you'd think it would be the opposite. I don't know.
I was going to ask about that too. So we're, you know, there's rumors that we're about to enter a real recession in the United States. And with like the Fed announcing that rates will stay higher longer, I think what that means for startups is things will be harder for longer. So I almost feel like a lot of startups, myself included, we were sort of in this sprint to like get profitable, survive. You know, the economy was sucking, but we were going to make it. And that actually, for me, was like a, you know, I'm a wartime CEO. I love it. I'm all, you know, excited and let's do it. And let's get profitable. There was a lot to sort of rally around. But now I'm starting to see like, okay, wait a minute. If things are going to be bad for a while, like, you know, we had hoped the IPO markets would reopen and funding would come back.
They kind of have a little bit.
They have a little bit, but I think for, you know, really, really strong companies. And I think what we're starting to hear and see is that like it's not reopened for the masses, and funding is certainly not coming back and may not be back for a long, long time or ever. And so I think a lot of founders, myself included, are going to like have to really buckle in for the long run here. And it's not like a sprint to survival. It's more like, you know, a slog for a long time. Yeah. And I think that's where people do start spiraling, because you don't have this like, you know, survival mode adrenaline to get excited about. You have, you know, oh, wait a minute, this is just how it is. And I'm wondering if there's any strategies for that.
There's dangers of acute versus chronic stress. So if we're talking about my line of work, not raising venture capital money, which is that when we enter that kind of the acute phase, when we get into the chronic phase, that's when as founders, we run into trouble, you know, emotionally. And as Kevin was saying, I think that's just a little bit, and it's not uncommon, of course, it's like a bit of that imposter syndrome, which is, oh my God, things are good. When's the ball going to drop? When's it, you know, like that piece of, we can't allow ourselves to celebrate when things are good. Something is looming around the corner, that we get into that negative mindset. Imposter syndrome, like that was just a fluke that I got that round. Really, someone's going to figure out that, like, you know, they're going to figure out our loopholes. So that's really common. That's not uncommon, Kevin. And I encourage you that next time something good happens, to go and celebrate. And the way, as you said, when you see a meeting coming up and you're feeling frustrated, like, shit, I don't want to do that, I invite you, this sounds really cheesy and I'm not telling you this is going to solve the world, but like, go do something fun that night. Like, go play pickleball. Go play cards with the guys. Go bring a little bit of fun and lightness, because that brings the creativity back into your life. That it changes the air in your mind.
Definitely is good advice. What I find it hard to follow, because like after any like really good thing that's happened, there's always just like, there's this other thing that I got to go and do. And also like, I've been fortunate enough to get relatively close to like some like very successful like CEOs. So Travis from Uber, Brian from Airbnb, and like they, as much as people want to say that there's this balance, there isn't. Like and we're talking to about like venture back, like you're trying to basically create a company that is the best in the world. And like what I have just when I've met with these people, like, they are on all the time. Like, they don't turn off. There's no balance. Like, the work-life balance does not exist. And so I don't know, like, obviously everybody picks what they want to do, right? Like, not everybody wants to be like a venture-backed founder, CEO. This is not meant for everybody, but I find that, like, myself and I think a lot of our audience, like, I don't know if there is like a true balance, and if there is, like, even as you mentioned, Erica, like, after the good part happens, do something that's nice for you. It sounds great, but in practice, you got to get back to like work. It feels like there's obviously so much competition, in whatever space you're in. If you are a venture backed company, and I find that it's impossible to, actually like kind of like take a break, or vacation or anything nice at all. And I also have seen that the people that I know that have been the most successful have been even more so, like you, I don't know, Elon Musk, but you even look at somebody like him, like, he's running how many companies, and he doesn't do all this balancing stuff. Like,
well, I think that, Lee, you know, I don't think success is only, I get that you're trying to grow a big company, but I think that it's important to look at yourself and the path that you are on as a whole. So I don't believe in work-life balance, believe in work-life harmony, and things work together. The goal is to get them working together harmoniously. So sometimes your work's going to get a 10 and your personal life's going to get a 4 that day. And sometimes, you know, but I think it's important to work towards allowing them to work in harmony, because if not, you're going to burn out, Kevin. You just always...
Oh, I burned out. I definitely have.
That kind of person. But Kevin, if that's the grand picture, no vacation, no downtime, you know, team, no sleep, hustle culture, that's going to serve you now. You're young, but it's not going to be sustainable forever.
The thing I liked about what Erica was saying is it not so much that you need to take all this vacation and do a hot bath every night and bubble bath. It's about, you know, making sure that your sleep and your health and your physical activity is supporting you as a founder. And I do really feel that I am at my peak performance as a founder when I'm, you know, feeling good, getting enough. I mean,
me too. I completely agree.
100% like require. I am not a person who can survive off no sleep. And I sometimes just have to take a nap in the middle of the day if I like got a bad night's sleep, because I know I might be sitting at my computer, but the brain isn't working. So I'm not getting stuff done. I encourage my team to do the same. So I do think those folks that you mentioned, they are, you know, making sure they can support that level of hustle by taking care of themselves physically. I mean, look at them. They're not like 500 pounds. They are probably taking care of themselves physically to some extent to support that kind of like, to sustain that sort of workload and energy. And I think, you know, for some people, the social stuff also brings some energy. And so, you know, making sure you have enough connection and social that you know, can bring that energy and that creativity back into your work. So I think, you know, I liked that Erica was talking about those five pillars, and they weren't like, the five pillars weren't like bubble bath. You know, it's what brings, you know, allows you to operate at peak performance. And I think it is, you know, it's not always going to be perfectly in balance. And usually one is like really lagging behind at any one time, and you got to kind of like bring it back up. But I think even those really great founders are paying attention to those other pillars, or they wouldn't be able to operate the way they are.
I disagree, because I've gotten to know some of them, and they,
I mean, look at Jeff Bezos. He's like a muscle man. Like, he's definitely,
well,
taking
now
care
he
of
is.
Himself.
He left Amazon, but yeah. I think that, it is really tough. And I think this is also like going back to like my original question, to you, Erica, like, there's so much like especially on social media, like life coaching, like this is what you need to do, all of this stuff. But like, I think in reality, even the most successful people, they don't practice like all of these different things. And it's totally not healthy. Like they go through ups and downs, and in their private life, I'm sure that it's like so like crazy and like it's not healthy, and they don't eat well. And then they go and they get a trainer, and then they lose a bunch of weight, and it's like up and down, like all this stuff. Yeah, it was up there. Sure. I think that that is like the reality, because like that's what I that's what I experience. But also I know so many people, and also to be clear, we are talking about like the 1% of the 1%. So the people that are building the Jeff Bezos of the world, like I'm sure like him going and through everything, like obviously none of this is public, but like I'm sure like him and his wife and like his kids and all that, like he was all encompassed by work. And right. Like I think that everybody paints like a nice picture. Like I think I remember Jeff Bezos on stage some time, and he's like, yeah, my wife's happy with me because I like load the dishwasher or something like that. But like I really do bet that like underneath all of that is just like this up and down cycles that are not like healthy mentally, physically, or emotionally, all of that. I think that's like the real picture. And this is also why I even brought up the life coaches, because they just make it seem so easy. It's like not even life coaches, but there's gotta be another word for people on TikTok just like spouting off like how to become a millionaire. It's just like, it's super easy, you just have to have all this real estate stuff, just
telling you how to get rich. One's like the financial,
yes,
which is
yeah
quick, and one is telling you how to take care of yourself. So those are two very different things.
Right.
But I agree with you that most experts out there, they present one way and they're completely different in their personal lives. Like they're telling you how to make money, and most of them don't even know how to save.
Exactly. Yeah.
Money, you know, broke. I'm not saying broke, but I, for sure, that's completely out of alignment. But that's so for me, that's how I feel my audience appreciates that I'm really honest in how. So I teach people based on science and research, and I'm the living proof of that, that not every day is perfect.
Right.
But I do live in alignment with what I teach, 100%.
Yeah, I also think, you know, when you try to look at it like on the order of days or even weeks, like you're going to fail, and then you're going to feel like shit. And so like look on a longer time frame of like, you know, actually this week I might be like doing way more on the social side and like actually doing kind of a shitty job as a founder. And I don't feel like one of those hustle culture founders, but
cannot measure success in a specimen. You need to measure over time.
Next week, I might be traveling and it's like all work all the time and I'm eating like shit and I'm not sleeping, but I'm doing great at, you know, doing great things for Winnie. And so I think I've really learned to kind of like zoom out. And, you know, like Erica said, sometimes things really do fall off. Like right now, my, you know, eating is in a really bad spot, and like that's built up, and I've gained a lot of weight that I'm not happy about, but like I'm gonna get that back on track because now I've like come to realize my weight is a problem. Maybe I'll find someone to give me an Ozempic prescription, any of our listeners that can hook me up. But in absence of that, I'm gonna pay a little bit more attention to that and try to like bring it back into the fold, and maybe something else will fall off in the meantime. But I do think it is important to like even keep those pillars in mind so that you could have an awareness. And I think it's, you know, just really unfair to hold yourself to the standard of like in a day, all those things must be in balance, or in a week, you know, look over the course of a longer.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Kevin, so I think that like, I know that you use like the Jeff Bezos and the, and you know,
Elon Musk,
or, Musk and,
yeah.
Bill, I mean,
they're charged,
you know,
well,
they totally are.
You know, we all have something. We all have shit. There's always something. And so, yes, they are successful businessmen. You know, if they wake up happy and abundance, you know, they're like, it's very easy to glorify someone, but you got to take, it's like when my kids are mad at me and they're like, you're the meanest mom. I'm like, you know what? If you want so-and-so's mom, you got to take everything.
You want Sarah's mom.
You got to take it all. So I think it's important. I think, Kevin, you should glorify yourself. I think that look at you. Like,
set a new model. Like, you can actually be a successful founder that doesn't divorce his wife, that's actually there for your kids. Like, that would be an amazing example to set. And that's also how I look at myself as, like, you know, a woman.
To be clear, like, I named some people that like are counter to that, but obviously there are a lot of other people. Like, I think of the Atlassian founders, I would put on the other side of the camp, right? Like, they didn't take a lot of venture. They didn't probably have a lot of pressure. They still are, I believe, all together. They went public. They're a really successful company, but I think that they have developed work life harmony or whatever you call it now. So of course there's going to be counter examples to that. But the thing that I just wanted to call out is that I think that the majority of people, they go and me as well, they go through these really rough cycles that ideally we would be doing all of these things all the time. And do I eat well? Do I exercise? Do I meditate? Do I sleep good? For the year. and then the other half is just it just kind of comes off in general that the advice is you need to do all this all the time. Right. And even if you take it down to for us, Sarah, being in the venture world, there's been there should be the 4-day work week, and that's going to be the thing and all of this stuff. And I just don't if you truly and this podcast is all about creating the, if you're listening, you're probably a venture founder. So if you're a venture founder, you are wanting to create the best thing ever. That is going to be the best product worldwide. That is your inspiration. And I just don't when we talk about all these different things and having balance and all of this stuff, I think that it's great. And also I would love to have it. And I do have it for a good percentage of the year. But also there's the other side that is it's just not fucking possible. You're competing with everybody in the world. If you're taking venture capital, the expectations are so fucking high, so high. And you need to actually put in those longer hours and do all those extra things. And when you have a win, it would be amazing if you could be and I'm terrible at this. Even celebrating a win with the team. And I know that's important to the team, but it's we got this other thing to do. That competition.
But that's a culture that you have to shift and say, we are.
Yeah.
To the top. If you're not feeling it, if you're not feeling worthy to celebrate, if you're just after the next hustle, if you're competing with someone else instead of yourself, then those are the messages they're going to get. And you're going to have a whole pretty high stressed out.
But here's a question.
Just keeping it real here.
Yeah.
You may be very wealthy and very successful, but are you going to be happy? Sir, I'm just giving you the.
That's a completely different question. Yeah.
If you're.
I will be happy if I'm wealthy and successful, just for the record.
Right. And also, even Sarah,
I've been to appreciate it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, I don't know if being the best in industry And being extremely wealthy is going to lead to happiness. But there are definitely, like, if you are taking venture capital money, and you're trying to build the best company, like, there's a lot of pressure on the line, and you don't have, like, a lot of room for error, and you have to, like, be better than everybody else. And so I think that a lot of these things are great advice, but I think that exactly what, Erica, what you talked about, like, we fall back into these cycles, and then it's like, we gotta get back on this. And I find myself, let's say, yeah, probably like half of the year, I'm like, I'm good. And the other half, I'm like, internally, like, I'm falling apart. Like, it's like, sorry, you mentioned, like, you're eating like shit, like, now, right now, like, right at this moment, I switched to keto. I just lost like 25 pounds. I'm feeling like a lot better. But like before then, I like the previous 3 to 6 months, I gained like 30 or 40 pounds. And so it's like, it's such an up and down thing. And I know.
But Kevin, if you can find yourself, that's why I run Busy to Bliss. If you, I mean, it's only for women, not for men, but that's why having a coach, a career coach, accountability partner in life is so important, so that you stay on track.
That's
possible. You can see someone every, if not every 2 weeks. I know you're busy, but if you can pencil in an hour twice a month to work on you, to build your habits and well-being, to be able to feel good as you're running your company, that will move the needle for you. So things like that will.
I think this was kind of an intervention for Kevin. So I know we're at time, and this was
super. So, and it's a good thing. It's a good.
But you
thing.
Won't take me on, Erica. I'm a man.
You know, maybe Kevin, if you want to, you know, switch over to being a woman, and
no, he can't come into Busy to Bliss. But Kevin, I coach men all the time. Program just on Busy to Bliss, but I do one-on-one with men all the time. And you would, your mind is open, so you would. New strategies for yourself.
I agree with Erica that I think Kevin, you would benefit from like some sort of coaching. And for me, this question was very informative.
Which is different, obviously.
I feel like we just get some free coaching from Erica. I am definitely getting the book. I feel like I have a lot I can take away from this. So thank you so much for...
Yeah, let's wrap this episode up. Thank you so much, Erica. Just to recap, your book for everybody listening or watching is, what is it called and where can you buy it?
Yeah, List Your Goals Journal, 100 Lists to Inspire and Motivate Your Growth. You can buy wherever books are sold. So I guess Amazon is probably the easiest, Barnes & Noble for you guys, Walmart, Target, but Amazon Perfect. Is probably your best bet. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being a guest, Erica, and thank you for everybody that is listening, and see you next time. All right.
Bye.